Now, the Minister for Justice, Helen McEntee, has confirmed this morning her decision to not move forward with plans to introduce new hate speech laws, which have been at the subject of much debate and some controversy since first tabled in 2022. It's understood the Justice Minister has received approval from the leaders of each of the coalition parties to abandon the hate speech element of the new Criminal Justice Bill. But Minister McEntee has confirmed those elements of the new law relating to hate crime will remain. Minister Oisin Smith, Green Party, has insisted on this. It was part of the programme for government. But what's your understanding of what's to go from this legislation in order to get it through?
I think Minister McEntee wants to get this law passed before the next government. And I think she wants to make sure she has consensus on all elements of the bill. So on those parts where she hasn't managed to get consensus, I think she's looking to put in some amendments. Certainly we need to have hate crime legislation. We're one of the only countries in Europe that doesn't have this. And just to say what it is, it means that if you carry out a crime and it is aggravated by hate, that you get a longer sentence. So if you attack a person, you mug a person, you get one sentence. But if you do it and you're motivated by hatred of women or hatred of people because of their colour, that you would get a longer sentence. So she wants to legislate for that right away. I think that the hate speech element, I think that she's looking at how to get consensus on that. She wants it to be something that everybody agrees with. And I think everyone knows from watching this week's RT Investigates programme and seeing the vile abuse that was hurled at Gardaí that then translated into inciting hatred and violence, the direct connection between encouraging attacks on people because of their colour or because of some characteristic of them. That's why we need to legislate for
this. Those aspects are being removed from the bill. It's that verbal aspect, that encouragement, that level of incitement, that's been removed from this legislation.
In fact, what we don't have in legislation at the moment is hate crime. So we don't have the idea that a crime can be aggravated. What we do have already in legislation from 1989 is hate speech, incitement to hatred. So if you encourage somebody to attack a person, if you encourage hatred, you encourage a genocide, then that is something that is criminalised already.
Your own party's justice spokesperson, Patrick Costello, said that the current 1989 Incitement to Hatred Act is inadequate. So in acquiescing to drop these hate speech elements from this bill, are people less safe now?
I think that the hate crime elements are not controversial, and I think it is very important that they go ahead. And I agree with Deputy Patrick Costello that we do need to strengthen it, but we need to strengthen it in a way that we achieve consensus across all parties.
And when the Justice Minister says it wasn't possible, the bill does not have consensus, and your own colleague in the Department of Public Expenditure and Reform, Pascal Donoghue, says it wasn't possible to achieve consensus. Is that consensus within government or is that consensus within the Oireachtas?
No, it's across political parties and across society generally. So, you know, that is what the process of making a law is that the government just doesn't just present something and ram it through in 5 minutes. There are 10 different,
it sometimes
10
does.
Different stages when, depending on the urgency of the law and the effects of it, there are 10 different stages to legislation passing.
Right.
And those are all opportunities for people to raise genuine concerns
right,
or
the
queries
Justice
that they
Minister
would have on the legislation.
This was first formulated in 2022. The Justice Minister said back in May that it was urgent.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there was adequate room at the time of the negotiations for the programme for government to achieve consensus. So we have the government consensus back then, and we have the urgency according to the Minister for Justice. So why is this hate speech element being dropped?
We have hate speech legislation already legislated for. In the 1989 Act, we don't have hate crime legislation legislated for. So that is the urgent part of the legislation to get done. We will find a way where there are concerns that have arisen in the public debate and in the debate in the Dáil and the Seanad on how to find a way to put in hate speech legislation that achieves consensus across all political parties and across society generally.
All right, Ivana Bacic, what's your reaction to this move? Do you believe people are less safe as a result of these elements of the bill being dropped?
I think it's deeply regrettable that we see the government apparently bowing to some sort of pressure to do this. I would say first, I very much welcome the fact that the hate crime provisions will, it seems, remain in place. In other words, or rather will continue to be proceeded through the Oireachtas, because it is important that we have legislation prescribing additional sanctions where people commit crimes and existing crimes like assault that are motivated by hatred. But it is deeply regrettable to see the incitement to hatred provisions you know, often people talk about them as hate speech, but this is incitement to hatred. These provisions need to be replaced. We've had an incitement to hatred, prohibition of incitement to hatred law since 1989. For 35 years, it's been on the statute books. I'm looking back at the Minister McEntee's speech when she introduced the reforming provisions back in 2023. And she said, over 35 years, we've had legislation which is seen as ineffective, limited and largely discredited. And that's because it's almost impossible to bring a successful prosecution for incitement to hatred under the current law. That's why it's necessary that we change the law. We've seen the sort of vile racist abuse that has been that is, it appears people can use with impunity. And on Barry O'Kelly's great programme, RTÉ Investigates, this week, we saw ethnic minority security staff, those who come here seeking refuge, being targeted with horrific abuse. And now the government are saying we're not going to be bringing forward legislation to reform and update our law on prohibition of incitement to hatred. This seems to me to be a government failing. Yes, right.
Do you see any inadequacy with it? Because, well, I think around 50 people have been convicted under the Incitement to Hatred Act 1989. But
many convictions overturned on appeal. So that's why the
minister is it not right that the bar is set high in terms of protecting freedom of speech, that the bar is set high on conviction under this kind of legislation?
Of course it must be. I practiced many years in criminal defence. Absolutely the bar must be high and our offences must be defined with precision. But the government have had a long time to get this right. The minister has pointed out in 2023 that consultation and research on the bill and on the appropriate provisions have been ongoing since 2019. The government, concerns were identified as the bill was proceeding through the Oireachtas. The government has had a whole summer recess in which to address those concerns and bring forward any necessary amendments so that the bill will achieve consensus before, whenever the election is. You know, it is, I think, deeply regrettable to those of ethnic minorities, to those of LGBTQ community, people who we've seen being targeted with hate speech and with incitement to hatred in recent months and years, who will feel, I think, Colm, less protected than they would have done had this bill been able to progress as it should have done.
All right. Padraig Tobin, ANC leader and TD, apologies for Meath West. I think I shifted your constituency there in your introduction at the beginning. You oppose this law. Could you support it in its amended form with the hate speech elements stripped out? Do you accept there is a need for hate to be seen as an aggravating factor when it comes to crimes against the person?
Well, I would say this is a good day for a liberal democracy in terms of the government's decision. You know, a liberal democracy is based on the competition of ideas. And when ideas compete with each other, the best ideas percolate to the top and people can see those ideas and they progress. And what we had in this bill was a form of censorship. It was an authoritarian bill, to be honest. And what it meant was that reasonable political discourse was going to have a chilling effect. And the fact that the government had, you know, free definitions in there was incredible. You know, if I asked a child what a Garda was and they said to me, well, a Garda is a Garda, I would accept that. You know, but I wouldn't accept a definition-free element within a piece of legislation from a minister who's looking to put people into jail on the basis of those definition-free terms. So this was an incredibly poor bill. It seems like, again, you know, Simon Harris maybe showing that he's more streetwise, that he realises that Ireland is bigger than maybe kind of the Irish Times editorial staff, etc., and that people want to be able to engage politically and respectfully on major issues that are in our country at the moment. I do think that the other element of the bill is less controversial by far.
Will you support it?
I'll have the
aggravating factor. But in principle, the principle of it, do you see the aggravating factor of hate, racism, for example? Do you accept the notion that there's a hate crime?
I honestly believe that the problem here is there's a gap between the government and the people. Because every day there are Gardaí resigning. Every day there are Gardaí retiring. Our Garda force is getting smaller.
Just stick to the specific question. On that specific question, do you in principle accept the idea there is such a thing as a hate crime?
I do think that there are people who are motivated by hate and who undertake crime as a result of
and
that.
Should that be an aggravating factor in sentencing?
I do think that the law has to recognise that fact. I absolutely do. There's no doubt about that. But what I want to say is people are looking at their own streets. They're looking at their own homes. They see the level of crime, antisocial behaviour and violence that are happening. And they see a government detached from reality who've been focusing on a hate speech bill for the last 2 years and not doing their job in terms of making sure we have enough Gardaí. Right now, the minister is letting prisoners out of prison early because there isn't enough prison spaces.
Without spreading it into the broad morass of the criminal justice system, wouldn't Gardaí resources, would it be a help to the Gardaí to have legislation that backs them up when they attend, for example, a public order, the scene of a public order disturbance, and people are, for example, using the kind of speech we saw in the RTE investigations documentary during the week? Do you believe that would support the Gardaí in that kind of a situation?
But the problem with the Gardaí needs, in fairness, is management. They need proper controls. You know, the RTE Investigate operation showed that, in actual fact, at 7 o'clock in the morning, what happened was the shift changed amongst the Gardaí. There was no command structure in place. There was nobody in charge. There was no policing plan in place. That's where everything is breaking down in this country. It's breaking down on the lack of resources and the lack of proper management. And the government, it's easy for the government to distract in terms of these bills and not do the job in terms of the bread and butter stuff.
I think it's extraordinary that any public representative would not acknowledge that hate crime exists. I mean, anyone who watched the programme, and of course there were Gardaí operational failings, and I think the Commissioner has rightly acknowledged the public order unit should not have been stood down. They should have been present much sooner at the site in Coolock that was the subject of the RTE Investigates documentary, and that's very clear. But there's also, I think, as anyone watching that programme will have seen, an appalling reality that people were able to use vile language to incite hatred against people on the basis of their ethnicity, apparently without without any fear of sanction or any fear of prosecution.
I need to come
and
back
that's
to
where,
some,
no, no, and that's support. Where we do need to acknowledge. So, yes, okay. Hate crimes
all right,
exist.
Just
and they
very,
need to be
very, very briefly,
absolutely, we abhor the ignorant, disgusting, ethno-nationalist language that was used by individuals in relation to that particular programme. But the truth of the matter is this particular bill did have a very, very broad application. It was so broad that nobody knew exactly what it meant. It reminds me of the referendums that have just gone by. Okay. It has a censorious
to be fair,
aspect.
You did make that
there's
point.
There's a lot of scaremongering going on about it.
I do want to go to a guest on the line because Dr. Eileen Cullity has been listening to our discussion. She's from the School of Communications at Dublin City University. Minister for Arts, Culture and Media, Catherine Martin, established a working group to counter disinformation more than a year and a half ago now with the aim of formulating a strategy to tackle the deluge of false material online and elsewhere, which, as we know, is mostly aimed at minority groups. Dr. Cullity, you attended a number of meetings of that working group I mentioned. You're an expert in the area. Can I ask you first, if we looked at the proposed hate speech laws and what they at least set out to tackle, it would have made it an offence to communicate material to the public that's, quote, likely to incite violence or hatred. And there would have been a new offence for those who create content that would incite violence with the intention of communicating it, but have not yet communicated publicly. Can you tackle the perpetrators of disinformation without that kind of law?
Well, incitement to hatred is a major issue that needs to be addressed. But in the online context, dropping the hate speech element doesn't necessarily mean that online platforms can ignore hate, because the new model of digital regulation makes a very important distinction between what's illegal and what's harmful. So if hate speech and hate crime are illegal, then platforms have to respond without undue delay. But where it isn't illegal, it is still considered harmful. So the platforms are expected to conduct risk assessments, to report on their actions, to have that reviewed by the European Commission. And so that is all still in place and that is all still happening. It's just a much slower, longer term approach that obviously isn't going to help when a crisis blows up suddenly in a community.
And who decides on what is harmful?
Well, this is a big issue across the board. So in Ireland, we'll have an online safety code that will set out categories of harmful content. The European Commission has set out categories of harmful content that includes hate, it includes disinformation, things that undermine democracy. And then platforms have to explain what they're doing. And it's worth noting as well that most of the major platforms signed up to an EU code on combating hate speech back in 2016. So it's obviously not perfect because we still see lots of hate online. But what it did achieve was that clearer structures were put in place. People were able to report hate. Platforms are expected to answer. And the big question is what the Commission will do next. Will they start fining platforms and say that those mechanisms you've put in place are just not good enough? We want you to do more.
And can you see the fingerprint of some of the kind of speech that's spread online? Could you see the fingerprint of those in some of the rhetoric that was being used on those protests that were covered in the RTE Investigates programme during the week?
Well, for sure. I think anybody who thinks about it at all and looks at human history, you know, one of the oldest tropes is to stroke up fear about minorities or about foreigners. and to say that they're posing threats to women and children. And that's the type of thing that we hear. And then it's added in with these this hateful language. The relationship between hate and disinformation is quite close, but it's also just very complex. I mean, we know that people tend to believe disinformation when they lack knowledge, when it riles up their emotions, and when it confirms their prejudices. And all of those things are at play. And really, they all need to be addressed. If you magically took away the disinformation from the equation, or if you could magically take away the hate speech, I don't think that would address all the other factors that are there, the lack of knowledge, the lack of trust, the perceived injustices. So we can't just tackle one of them. We need to tackle all of them.
And the National Working Group to Counter Disinformation, it was established back in February 2023. They've met on 12 occasions. We haven't seen the strategy yet. We understand it's due to come out sometime in the autumn, but you've gone to some of those meetings. So what might we expect, or what did you recommend?
Well, basically, the national strategy is the principle behind it is to develop a set of guidelines for various institutions and how they should go about countering disinformation. And it's basically things like respecting human rights, making sure there's evidence for what they're doing. So contrary to what some public figures have suggested, there's nothing in it about making decisions about what is and isn't true or looking at specific cases, because that's not what a strategy does. So I think there's potentially a gulf between what some people think it's going to do and what it actually does. But in terms of, say, our own perspective from DCU, from working on disinformation for about 7 years, we've seen it unfold as a research topic, as a policy issue, and as a driver of hate and mistrust. And it's very striking that what we lack in Ireland is just good evidence about what is actually going on online. Who is producing disinformation? What platforms are they using? What communities are they targeting? So what I would like to see in Ireland is it could be a very small research team, but some funding that would be producing public reports with clear evidence-based information so that anybody, journalists, teachers, politicians would know, you know, what are our parents seeing on Facebook? What are our teenagers seeing on TikTok? What are the trends? Because without that kind of information, we're always going to be on the back foot of just responding to things.
All right. And do you understand that any of those recommendations were taken on board and might be reflected in this strategy that we understand is going to be seen at some point in the autumn?
Well, I think the strategy will set out what existing bodies are going to do. So, for example, Media Literacy Ireland as an existing body will explain what it will do to promote media literacy. But to develop that kind of capability, the issue is that it's not clear where it would sit, because disinformation cuts across so many different departments and remits. You know, it's a justice issue, it's an education issue, it's communications, it's a regulation issue. So I don't think that will be specifically there. I would like to see it there. I think it would be a great benefit to anybody working in this area.
All right, Dr. Eileen Connolly, thanks very much for joining us. Oisín Smith, to you, I suppose ultimately it's a public expenditure and reform idea, because if it's going to work, it's going to have to be paid for. In the absence of hate speech legislation, if you want to counteract disinformation online, will the tools be provided and will they be financed?
I don't think money is going to be a problem. I'm surprised you raised that. So, you know, disinformation at the greatest form is a threat to our democracy. We see in other countries organized action by countries against other countries, nation states using disinformation as a form of warfare. So we see that there, that both in Germany and in France recently, large networks of accounts were identified by the state as being used to promote particular views from the Russian government. For example, in Germany, there was this view that they were trying to promote that Germany should not provide military support to Ukraine. A large number of accounts were identified as a result of that. I went back to the National Cybersecurity Centre and said, I presume that we are talking directly to them, to the French and German government, to identify how they did that.
Directly to them?
Yes, they are. And so that, I mean, that's what's happening at the moment. That is the threat. You go online, you post something online. I'll tell you how it manifests itself. You put something online and you see 50 accounts underneath it immediately responding in a strange and strangely coordinated sense with a very specific line, appearing to be real accounts. And then that gives the impression that that is public opinion. And then that begins to catch on. And then
so
you have a protest on the street
with
people repeating things that they've heard from those accounts, which have been driven by a foreign government. So that's the process. It's a form of it's a psychological operation. It's a form of cyber warfare.
Sure, that's the template for it. But where does that specific issue manifest itself in Ireland? On what particular issue are people receiving disinformation? And is it your belief that they're getting it from foreign governments?
Of course. And so one specific target is during elections. The Electoral Commission has a brief to counter that. The Media Commission, Commissioner Naman, is set up for generally responding to counter disinformation, which is what Eileen Cullity was talking about there. And also the two intelligence agencies in the government, under the Gardaí and the Defence Forces, are also tasked with collecting information and assessing what the threats are.
All right, Ivana Bacic, the issue of disinformation in the absence of hate speech laws, they've been dropped now. A national strategy to counter disinformation is due out. What would you like to see in it in order to at least try to protect against some of the more vitriolic statements we see online, or its ability at least to galvanise people to take action on foot of it?
Well, what I would like to see is more urgency from government on this. I mean, listening to Eileen Cullity, we all know the relationship between disinformation and hatred is strong. We know the potential of this to undermine democracy. Oisin's right about that. We know that Russia is a source of much of the disinformation that is and indeed hate that is circulating online. But it's how we tackle that. And we've heard that the National Strategy on Disinformation has yet to be published. We've heard that the Online Safety Code, which is going to be crucial to the implementation of the powers of Commissioner Naman, that's not yet out either. And crucially, for people who have themselves been targeted through vile disinformation or hate online, I think anyone I speak to, wants to know, well, what will Commissioner Naman be able to do about this? Will they have the power to fine platforms? That's one thing. But perhaps more critically for those who are targeted, will they have power to request and require takedown of disinformation and hate speech? And that's where we've seen a real lack, and the online platforms simply failing to do this voluntarily. They have to be made to do it, and not enough from government on this yet.
Padraig Tobin, you said you found what was being said at those demonstrations portrayed by Barry O'Kelly objectionable, some of the language that was being used. In the absence of hate speech legislation, which you opposed, what would you like to see protect people from disinformation of the kind we see proliferated online, or that kind of speech that you heard at the demonstrations?
Well, first of all, I would say I would agree in terms of foreign countries destabilising democracies in terms of, you know, bot actions on social media. I think that has to be tackled, there's no doubt. I think we need to educate, especially children, in terms of social media literacy. That's a really important element. We need to provide better fact-checking. We need a situation where we prevent algorithms that purposefully push hate within social media. I think that's absolutely wrong. But I will say, like, one of the reasons, and this is really important, one of the reasons why a lot of this, let's say, conspiracy has taken off over the last number of years is people have lost trust in the state. And, you know, trust in the state is very, very important. There are plenty of occasions where the government themselves push disinformation and misinformation. Like the two referendums previously, we had situations where, you know, Roger O'Gorman was saying that, you know, there was a very close definition of what a durable relationship was. And then yet we see that information comes out from the government, which says they actually got advice to say there wasn't very good information about this.
All right.
In terms of the taxation policy, again, the government were misrepresenting the
information. We're going to have to move on to other issues.
But that's important.
I have to let Oisin Smith respond to that.
Is a cause of mistrust.
Okay. Debate between politicians is not disinformation. So, you know, I'm going to have a different opinion from Ivana, I'm from Padder on something. We're going to have different values. We're going to have different views on what something means. And we can have a debate about that. The government and the opposition will have debates, and people within government will argue with each other. That's not disinformation. That's democracy and the expression. As you said earlier, in a liberal democracy, people express different views and then decisions are made through a majority vote.
Is
the there's a huge difference between people in a democracy debating with each other openly about their views and the Russian government paying for a disinformation campaign, an influence campaign to try to destabilise another state.
Which we know they're doing.
Okay, we have to leave it there because we do have to move on. We'll be looking at the death of Aoife Johnston and also the latest on a further delay in the opening of the new children's hospital after this.
Saturday with Colm O'Mungon on RTE Radio 1.